So this morning, what we're going to look at is three interactions that Jesus had with followers or would-be followers. Okay? And you know what? It's funny that they just go boom, boom, boom in such a short text. But you know, I think that in those interactions that Jesus has between the first disciple and the second disciple and then the group, whatever grouping there was on the boat, we actually learn three very important principles about discipleship. Three great truths based on the words and actions of Jesus about what it takes and what it means to follow him. Now, I want to give this a little bit of context before we get into the interactions. Actually, the way that Matthew's narrative goes, what we are encountering here as we come into the story at chapter 8, verse 16, is the very end of what would have been an extremely, extremely long day for Jesus. When does the day begin in Matthew's narrative? It actually begins at the beginning of chapter 5, at the beginning of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which takes up chapter 5 and chapter 6 and into chapter 7. And so now here we are in chapter 8, and we are looking at, according to Matthew's narrative, one extremely long day. And so Jesus goes up on the mountainside and teaches the Beatitudes and kind of reinterprets the law for many, many hours. I think it's the longest sermon that's recorded in Scripture. And then it says that he comes down from the mountainside and he has crowds following him. And in the course of him coming down from the mountain, he heals a man of leprosy. And then he comes to the story that we looked at last week with the centurion. He heals the servant of the centurion from a distance. And then the couple verses that lead into where we began this morning, he actually goes to the mother of Peter's house in Capernaum and heals her from a fever. And so all of this, provided it happened in one day, that's a very, very productive and also must have been an extremely exhausting day's work. And we see as we enter the story that the day is not even yet over. And so, as we did just a few minutes ago, we pick up the story in verses 16 and 17, where it says, "When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him, and he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick." And then it talks about how that was to fulfill what was spoken in the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities and carried our diseases. And so Jesus spends the day teaching. Crowds follow him down from the mountainside, and they continued to come. And so Jesus, throughout this extremely long day, had revealed his divine authority in his teachings and also had revealed his divine authority and power in terms of healing the physical body of different people. And now, in the verse that we began with, he reveals his divine authority even in healing people spiritually, even in casting out demons. Well, as I said, this was an extremely long day. And, you know, even Jesus, trapped in human flesh as he was, eventually needs some rest. Jesus needed to rest. And so when Jesus saw the crowds around him, he saw that the crowds had no indication of dwindling whatsoever. He gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. And so obviously, and I think this needs to be said before we look at these interactions with his disciples or would-be disciples. At this point in Jesus' ministry, he is at the absolute pinnacle of public opinion, I would say. Okay, he's got crowds following him. He is teaching completely amazing things. He is doing completely amazing things in healing people from sicknesses, in casting out demons. Jesus is at his peak in terms of having a following that is very well disposed toward him. And so he picked up probably a lot more followers as he traveled around in this small district of Capernaum. But that means more energy expended. That means more people demanding his time. And so eventually, at the end of that day, he instructs his disciples to man the boat. Now, we don't know exactly who the disciples were at this point, the official ones as we think of them. Because it's not until Matthew chapter 10 that we actually get the list of the 12 disciples. So it's some grouping of those disciples here in chapter 8. And yet, as I said, what we're going to focus on this morning is these three principles about discipleship. These three great truths about what it means and what it takes to follow Jesus. And so, just as Jesus was giving orders to launch the boat, we pick it up in verse 19. Here's the first interaction. A teacher of the law came to Jesus and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Now, I think that's a pretty bold statement, don't you? And the fact that this is a teacher of the law means that this was no lowly peasant. This was no person that had, you know, no other options. This is somebody that had some intelligence, and this is a person that had some means. This is a person that potentially had a career already. And so he says, "You know what, Jesus? I am ready to follow you everywhere." He is enthusiastic. He's energetic. He is ready to go. Ready to go. But I want you to pay close attention to how he addresses Jesus. He addresses Jesus as teacher. I'll just file that away for a minute. He says, "Teacher, I am willing to follow you wherever you go. I'm willing to get into this boat that you're getting ready. I'm ready to follow you anywhere. Wherever this boat goes, I'm there. Aren't you impressed? Aren't you impressed by my resolve and my devotion?" Well, how does Jesus react to this very enthusiastic disciple? Verse 20. Jesus replied, "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." It's a strange way to respond. But with that, the conversation with that first potential disciple, that teacher of the law, is over. And it seems to me as though Jesus is sending the guy packing. Sending the guy packing. What is Jesus saying? What is Jesus saying? Because we don't hear about this guy at all as we continue on with the text. Jesus is saying, discipleship requires great sacrifice. Discipleship requires great sacrifice. And he seems to be speaking this very, very plainly to this enthusiastic would-be follower. Now, it should be no surprise to us that Jesus, who is an embodiment of truth, throughout the Gospels, throughout the story of Jesus, he seems to have this uncanny divine ability to see right through people's outward behaviors and outward words, right to what is in their hearts, what is driving their behavior and their words. He can see to people's motivations. He can see to what people are actually desiring. And so we have to assume that in this interaction, even though this guy that comes to him is qualified and competent, seemingly, and excited to be a part of Jesus' ministry, that Jesus sees something that puts him off. And Jesus, in essence, answers him saying, "You have not counted the cost of following me. You have not thought through what this would mean. And so I think we can hypothesize that what's going on in this young teacher of the law's heart is that he sees Jesus, again, at the pinnacle of his ministry, at the pinnacle of his career, with all kinds of public opinion going his way, with all kinds of influence in terms of the crowds that he's drawing, with all kinds of power in terms of his insights and teaching and his power over both the physical and the spiritual realms. And this teacher of the law sees all kinds of opportunity. Why wouldn't you hitch your wagon to Jesus? This guy is already a teacher of the law. Why not hitch my wagon to the best teacher there is on the scene right now? Jesus knows this. Jesus knows this, but Jesus knows something else as well. Jesus knows that this public opinion is not going to last. Jesus knows that the favor that he is being shown by crowds and crowds of people is going to be annihilated, that these very people that are following him around right now will be shouting, "Crucify him," at some point in the future. And he realizes that this very enthusiastic teacher of the law has no idea what he's getting into, has no idea. And so Jesus says, "No. The reasons that you want to follow me are not the right reasons. It's not loyalty, it's not commitment, it's to further your own career, and that means when the going gets tough, you're going to be gone." Fair enough. Discipleship requires great sacrifice. Now, what does that have to do with us? You know, as I think about discipleship often, and I consider different places in the world where it costs a lot more to follow Jesus than it does here in Oostburg, Wisconsin. I mean, there are parts of the world where people follow Jesus at risk of their life and their limb. And so, you know, as we think about discipleship, I'm sure that all of us would agree with that and all of us would acknowledge that. And we're all very, very grateful that, you know what, following Jesus doesn't cost us all that much here in Oostburg, Wisconsin, here in this very Christian community, this very Christian area. But Jesus says, discipleship requires great sacrifice, period. It doesn't say, you know, it's going to matter where you live and stuff. No, discipleship requires great sacrifice. So I'm thinking about this week. Perhaps we're looking at different Christian communities around the world that suffer from more overt levels of persecution. And we're assuming that, you know, we're disciples, we're followers of Jesus right here in Oostburg, and it's fairly easy. But, you know, I was questioning this week, are we really? Are we really? Discipleship requires great sacrifice. Following Jesus costs us something. And are we paying that cost? I want you to think about your workplaces a little bit. Think about your workplaces. Now, I'm not saying that all of you have control over what your culture is at your workplaces, but is everything that's going on there on the up and up? Is everything that happens within the walls of your company and how it does business, is everything in ethical agreement with your ethical morality as a follower of Jesus? And if it's not, does discipleship, does following Jesus mean that you need to take some difficult stands even though it's going to affect the bottom line? Or think about this. Now, I did some calculations a while back, and you know, it's not like I've had these in my back pocket, but it is interesting that if everybody in our congregation was serious about tithing, that our working budget would be well over $2 million. Now, our budget is less than a quarter of that, and you know, we're struggling right now to meet it. That's always kind of what happens in the summer, so you know, we don't need to necessarily be alarmed about it, but you know, maybe the cost of following Jesus means that we need to bring our first fruits a little bit more intentionally rather than waiting to see how God blesses us and then giving the leftovers. Perhaps it has to do with the way that we behave in our families. Are we taking our jobs as parents and grandparents seriously enough? Are we taking stands within our own families so that we can be examples of following Jesus and actually work towards transformation in a positive sense in dicey family situations? Or are we stepping back, not boldly following Jesus, and just turning a blind eye so that we maintain some kind of a surface peace? So we could say that with all of our relationships. You know, we assume that we're being good disciples and that we're following Jesus, and it's just easier here than it is in other parts of the world. But are we? Are we truly following Jesus, or do we have to count the cost more often? Do we have to more fully realize that discipleship requires great sacrifice? Let's look at the second interaction. Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." Now, I told you to pay attention to what the teacher of the law called Jesus. He called Jesus teacher, right? Because he's a teacher of the law, so what matters to him is teaching, and he sees Jesus as a great teacher. Now, this disciple addresses Jesus a little bit differently. And so I want to point that out right away. Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go bury my father." See, the second disciple has a little bit more insight than the teacher of the law did. First of all, he sees Jesus a little bit more accurately for who Jesus truly is. Not just a teacher, Jesus is Lord. Okay, so he puts Jesus on a higher level, and that means the call to discipleship that he is feeling is going to be a stronger feeling as well. But see, he recognizes something else as well. He sees that, yes, by agreeing to follow Jesus, by putting myself into the position of a disciple, I might very well be getting in for more than I bargained for. And so he, in essence, hedges a little bit, and he says, you know, I think this is an extremely serious thing. I think this is an important thing, and I just need to kind of put my house in order before I come to follow you. I guess I don't want to get into this boat right now. There's some things that I need to take care of, and they're good things. They're good things because my father is old and he depends on me, and you would not want me to dishonor my father and mother in any way. But, you know, like I said, my father is old and he will pass away potentially very soon, and then I'm going to be completely free to follow you. How does Jesus respond to the second disciple, this second potential follower? He says, "Follow me. And let the dead bury their own dead." And that's the end of the story. Another abrupt ending. But I want to point out that this is a much different response that Jesus gives this man. See, this second disciple, this reluctant disciple, actually does get the invitation from Jesus. where the first very eager disciple seems to get sent away. And so it is extremely important. This second disciple counted the cost, realized that discipleship requires great sacrifice, and Jesus seems to affirm that and reward this man for that. He gets the nod. He gets the come and follow me. But it brings us to a second lesson, what Jesus says. When he says, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead, he is telling us that discipleship requires ultimate allegiance. Jesus communicates that it is the single most important thing in anyone's life to follow him. More important than anything else. More important than all kinds of good and wonderful and productive things that we give our time and our energy to. It is vastly more important to follow Jesus. It's more important than waiting around for parents to die. It's more important than waiting around for kids to grow up so that we have more time to give to ministry and mission. It's more important than earning your first million so that you can responsibly take care of everything from cradle to grave financially before you start giving sacrificially and doing things that are truly kingdom building today. Following Jesus is more important than whatever stands in your way. Yes, following Jesus, being a disciple, is more important than anything else. It requires great sacrifice. It requires ultimate allegiance. And now the third story very quickly. Then he got into the boat and his disciples followed him. Without warning, a furious storm came on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. Kind of reminds us of Jonah a little bit, right? The disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, save us, we're going to drown. And Jesus replied, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. The men were amazed and asked, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. And so they embark on their voyage across the sea, and immediately this storm rises up, and Jesus is sleeping in the bottom of the boat, and the disciples are freaking out, thinking, we're going to die. There is no way we're going to get out of this. Wake up, Jesus. Maybe he can do something. And Jesus gets up and in effect says, why are you guys afraid? Then he takes care of the problem. Why are you guys afraid? He's just not mad at them for waking him up. Waking him up is perfectly appropriate. He was happy that they woke him up. His issue is that, you know, why are you afraid? Because I'm here. So the third thing, third principle, third truth about following Jesus, discipleship requires absolute trust. And so the first one, following Jesus is so difficult that, of course, there's many reasons why you'd be tempted not to. Requires great sacrifice. Second, following Jesus is extremely, extremely important. It's the most important thing that you could do, so you simply must do it. And then third, following Jesus is so safe that even in the midst of a violent storm, and we're talking about the storms of life here, you have nothing to fear. Third principle is this: there is no place safer than following Jesus. Following Jesus on a day-to-day basis, on a consistent basis, puts you in a position where you are in the absolute best possible place for today and for tomorrow and for all of eternity. Brothers and sisters, I guarantee that when you follow Jesus, you will discover that you are indeed in good hands. When you follow Jesus, when you put every aspect of life in his hands, when you give him your treasures, when you give to his church and his kingdom work, there's no better place to put your money. when you put your time into serving others and speaking the truth of the gospel wherever Jesus puts you, there's no better way to spend your time. There is no better way to serve your family than to be a godly example and to show both your wife or your spouse or your children that Jesus always comes first, because then you're putting them in a position to succeed today and tomorrow and for all eternity. Can you imagine that there is a more safe and secure place than where Jesus wants you to be at this very moment? Jesus says to his disciples, "Oh, you of little faith." Brothers and sisters, we need big faith. And God, as we talked about last week, expects big faith. Because we know what Jesus did. We know that he sacrificed everything so that we could be saved. This isn't something that we're hoping for in the future. This is something that we point to in the past, and it changes everything about today, tomorrow, and all eternity. May we be more faithful in following Jesus. May we be more serious about discipleship, holding each other accountable and glorifying God as we do. It's not supposed to be easy. It's profoundly important. And we are always safe and secure in Jesus' hands. Let's pray.